And welcome again to Brew Crew Online. This is Reviewing the Brews podcast. I'm Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And yet again, we bring you everything brewers, our opinions, you know, what happens and things like that. And Colin, it's been really great the past 2 days for the Brewers, taking 2 out of 4 so far in this series against the Dodgers, you know, the MLB's best team right now. And, you know, last night's game especially, starting Michael Fiers, you know, he looked pretty good, you know, going 7 innings, giving up 5 hits, 1 run, striking out 3. Matching up against, you know, the Dodgers rookie who they just brought up as well from AAA, and it was a good outing by both pitchers.
It was. Everyone did a good job. I mean, he had that home run by Braun to start it off, the 2-run home run, which ended up being the only thing we needed. But outside of that, I thought the Dodgers pitcher did well. Fiers did fantastic, I thought. To go 7 innings in his first start, too, I mean, that's confidence building. That's a huge thing.
Yeah, and looking at his pitch count, he probably could have gone an inning longer. He was only at 89 pitches. I mean, I'm sure Reinicke just wanted to, you know, get him used to starting. But really, he easily could have gone another inning.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about Frankie got his 10th hold, I believe, of the season. And he did an excellent job. And then Axford as well with the save all around. I mean, it was... You like when you have a pitcher go 7 innings. You know, it's so much more comforting just to be like, okay, Frankie, and then Axford, and then that's it. There's no pressure, there's nothing to worry about, it's just it.
Because certainly we weren't getting those starts from our guys. The only guy we were getting that from was Greinke. And it's been really hard this season going with that, because we've had the bullpen that's been struggling. And having, you know, 1-2 games against the Dodgers so far, it's a confidence booster. I really think this can help us turn around our season, because everybody thought, you know, it's now or never, we got to turn around, and maybe this is the turnaround right here. We're beating, you know, MLB, one of the MLB's best teams right now in their home, and, you know, tonight's matchup is going to be even better. I think we have Gallardo versus Kershaw, and that's going to be a heck of a matchup as well. But, I mean, it's just been great to know that we're not dead yet.
Yeah. No, and, you know, you look at this last week, and, you know, we dropped those two to the Diamondbacks that were close. The one on Saturday wasn't as close, but, I mean, they were tough losses. But we seem to have been, you know, we're picking things up. And you have Markham last night striking out 9. Monday night against the Dodgers. The dates all kind of run together at some point.
Yeah, I thought, you know, yesterday was like Thursday. I have to ask people, like, what day is it? Because I lose track of it, too, so it's all good.
Right. I mean, Markham striking out 9 batters. Yeah. 9 Dodgers batters, no less.
I mean, that was in a lineup without Matt Kemp, because he just came back last night. But still, that's really impressive, considering, you know, how good the Dodgers have been doing, you know, with the bats of, you know, Tony Gwynn Jr. and Andre Ethier.
Yeah.
And Jerry Harrison Jr., who actually contributed pretty well in that Monday night game. It was amazing to see Markham shut them down. And again, you know, go 7 innings, because, you know, it was Markham, Frankie, and then Axford. Same thing it was last night. It was Fiers, Frankie, and Axford.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying we should just, you know, go, you know, starter 7 innings, then Frankie, then Axford, because that's gonna tire them out. Obviously, we need to put Lowe in there, who I think out of everybody in the bullpen, excluding, you know, the setup man and the closer, I think Lowe is the only guy I kind of feel comfortable going to. Dillard is... Barris, we can just... Let's ship him somewhere else. That's not Milwaukee. It's just... I think it's a confidence booster. I really think it is.
Yeah, when you can string together real quality starts, like Fiers and Markham had... It's it definitely builds confidence, and it's going to inspire the rest of your pitchers, and giving the bullpen now 2 days of rest outside of Frankie and Axford, who honestly don't need as much rest as everybody else. it's really a confidence booster, and it's good to see coming into a month where we really need to make a move.
Yeah, and you know, with the injuries we've had, who would have thought, you know, we'd be starting Taylor Green at first. We'd have Cody Ransom at short. I mean, we have lost a lot of people. And really, I think the only big thing is the shortstop position, because I don't think Cody Ransom will be able to get the job done the entire season. And I just... it's not that he's a bad player. He's an average player. And first base, I think, can be settled if between Corey Hart and Taylor Green, providing how long Ishikawa's absence will be.
Right.
And then putting...
Which we still don't know, by the way. There's nothing.
Yeah.
I'm just checking the updates right now. It's still to be determined.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we can easily put Hart at first and put Nori in right. And we won't be really missing anybody because Lucroy will be back. You know, Kataris will probably mainly be catching from now on. Well, mainly, I think he might be splitting time, but I mean, he's obviously catching for Wolf still. But
right. The
thing is, I think even with all the injuries, our lineup still doesn't look all that different.
No, it really doesn't. It's going to be tough. I mean, you know, I think you're going to see Masonette get into shortstop. You know, more regularly, obviously, because Ransom's 36, and Renicki himself described him as someone who used to be a very good defensive player, which is not the most confidence-inspiring of statements, but, you know, I think you'll see it happen, and I think he'll be okay. Maldonado, the new catcher, he did well last night.
One for three,
yeah. I think, you know, it's going to be a matter of time. These guys need to get into rhythm. And it's important to remember this year, too, because I know there are a lot of Brewers doomsdayers out there right now. We have an extra playoff spot this year. So even in a division race, you don't even need to play like the Cardinals played in August and September in order to get in the playoffs this year.
Well, no, but certainly nice to have that kind of drive, I guess. But, no, I mean, it's not all gloom and doom. The season is not done. Yes, we are 21-28 in the season. But, like, you know, it's only May 30th. We have time to turn this around, and we can turn this around. You know, a lot of teams, like we saw last year, collapsed from August to October. Well, maybe our collapse, I don't want to say collapse, maybe our slow start was from April to the starting of June. Maybe we can turn it around from here, because we definitely have the potential to. I mean, I think with Michael Fiers being the fifth guy, and I think going forward he can be a fifth guy, it adds a lot, because we have Greinke, we have Markham, who can obviously pitch well now. We have Gallardo, who's kind of... It's kind of like playing Russian roulette sometimes with Gallardo, and I don't mean that in a bad way,
right.
Even though it sounds like it. It's just... Because in Russian roulette, you have, what, like, 1 in 6 chances of being shot. Well, with Gallardo, you have 1 in 5 chances of him having a bad outing. It's doubled if he plays the Cardinals, but we've talked about that before. But, I mean, tonight he's going up against Kershaw, you know, one of the best pitchers and one of the youngest pitchers, you know, to be this good in the game right now. And, you know, we know Gallardo can do well. Gallardo is an innings-eater pitcher. He has good stuff that, you know, can strike out a lot of people. And we've seen that before from him, and I don't know if it's just a matter of the fact that he's parted with the team that's slumping still, and he'll break out of that, but we need some part of this team to break out of that. If it's going to be the offense, if it's going to be the starting pitching or the bullpen, we need a part of it to break out now if we want the season to turn around.
Right, and, you know, with Gallardo, I think the thing is, he can't fall behind on people. You know, when he starts falling behind on batters and he starts falling behind on pitch counts, he really does struggle with that, and it's easier to get after him if they can force him to make a pitch. But if he can battle through that and he can just get after hitters right away, he's so much more effective. And you've seen it before, so...
Yeah, I mean, you know, his start tonight comes against, obviously against the Dodgers. His next start will be against the Cubs, and, you know, a team he's faced numerous times in his career. So obviously he might be a little bit more comfortable there. After this LA series, we head back home to play Pittsburgh, and then the Cubs, and then San Diego. So it's a very long home stretch for us, spanning from June 1st to June 10th. You know, I think that's a homestand. I say, you know, in air quotes, because I said this about the Minnesota series, that I hope we don't have too much trouble with, especially against San Diego, noting how you said they had 15 players on their DL. So, I mean... Their games, we're probably going to need to win, but it's just a matter of having the momentum we've had the past few days going forward. We know we can get the job done with the guys we have. You guys, a lot of them coming up from AAA, that some of them, I don't know if they're ready yet, but we had to put them there because they're going to have to be there up there in their career any point. So, right. I mean, we have to get these guys ready, and maybe it's now. And if they're doing well enough now, then maybe there's no point in sending them back to the minors.
Right. You know, and it is, like you said, it is kind of a sink or swim situation. And you have to remember, you know, long term, too. It's easy to sit here as a fan and just say, oh, well, they should just, you know, trade these guys for this guy, or we should just get rid of this person and bring someone else in. But long term, that's, you know, how much of a solution is that, especially if that person doesn't work out? So sometimes it's easier to just say, we have these young guys, we need them developed anyways, let's put them to work.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not the type of team that has necessarily the money to go out and buy all these people. We're not a huge market team. So we have to stick with what we have. So, you know, a lot of it does blossom into talent. We've seen that with Braun and Fielder in the past. You know, we've seen it with Gallardo. You know, fortunately enough, we were able to get Zach Greinke when we got him, and he's done well for us. But, I mean, if we have a bad season, we have a bad season. That's it. You know, I think at a point in a bad season, sometime later on the road, if this turns into that, we hit a rebuilding phase. We go into next year, you know, we're going to go within questions saying, well, what can we do to improve here? You know, how can we step it up, you know, going, you know, into games? Because we've noted that our relievers hit a brick wall around when they come in at the sixth or seventh inning, where they hit a brick wall and cannot pitch. You know, so maybe we can go over that speed bump somewhere along the line. But later along the line, we have to realize maybe the season's shot for now. I'm not saying it is now. Like I said, we can definitely turn this around. But, you know, say going into August or late July or whatever, we don't think we stand a chance. And we go, you know, into that rebuilding phase and be better for next year.
Right. And the cues for that will be very obvious. And you know, looking it over right now, you know, we're near the bottom of the division. We're solely in fifth place, and seven games back. But you look at, you know, Pittsburgh, who we play, and, you know, playing these divisional opponents coming up in the schedule, it is not that difficult to swing yourself up into fourth or third place in this division. To be perfectly honest, our division's not very competitive this year.
No, I mean, you had St. Louis who got off to that very hot start and has lost that lead to Cincinnati. Now they're 1.5 games behind Cincinnati. But say we potentially sweep the Dodgers. By God, if we beat Kershaw, I will just... You don't know how happy I'll be if we beat Kershaw.
Right.
You know, after that, we do play the Pirates. So let's say we sweep the Dodgers, then we take 2 out of 3 from the Pirates. That puts us, you know, probably tied for the third place, and we can easily rebound from that because we play the Cubs, pushing them down even farther, and, you know, hoping for St. Louis to lose and Pittsburgh to lose. You know, we'll be right up neck and neck with, you know, Cincinnati and St. Louis, and we can easily do that. We know we have the potential to do that. We know we're a good team. We are a playoff, you know, team. We saw that last year when we lost to the Cardinals in the NLCS. We got that far. We know we can do it again.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's just not... I just don't think, you know, losing Fielder does all that damage, because Fielder doesn't pitch. You know, that's half the battle right there. You know, as Yogi Berra said, 90% of the game is half mental.
Right.
So, and we talked about before how mental things affect pitchers tremendously. You know, they have that pressure already on them when they inherit runners. You know, I can't let this guy get hit. I can't walk this guy, because if I do, you know, that'll put, you know, make the bases loaded, or this hit will drive in that run from second. We'll, you know, and, you know, blowing the lead. That's a lot of mental pressure for those guys who sometimes have to do that every day. And you have to be very, what's the word I'm looking for? Very adamant, I guess, in your thought process to be a setup man and to be a closer, to know that these little, you know, mishaps you have can affect you going forward. You have to rebound past that. And I don't know if, you know, all of our bullpen can do that, because they've shown time and time again that, yeah, they can get their job done every once in a while. And we don't need every once in a while. We need more consistency than that.
Right.
So,
you know, it's such a difficult season to watch and be a part of as a fan and as someone who covers it this year, because, you know, like you said, you see that potential, and you just see it, like, you know, where is it going? How is it not breaking our way? I guess is the best way to put it. And that's difficult to be a part of, but these things have a way of working themselves out over the course of the season if your team is talented, and I believe our team is talented enough to do well.
You know, and I live in Ohio. I live an hour away from Cleveland. So, you know, I hear about the Indians all the time, and the past few years, I don't really follow the Indians. I just kind of watch them whenever they're on and just read about them. So I guess it kind of is following, but I don't. Right. They're not one of my favorite teams or anything. I'm just kind of neutral with them. And looking at them, they're a team that kind of reminds me of Milwaukee in the fact that they have a lot of talent there, a lot of good talent. And they lose, what, 2 to the Royals. I mean, how does that happen? How do you have so much talent, so much potential to do well, get into first place, and then just lose it? I mean, that frustrates me with teams, you know, and it kind of frustrates me a little bit with Milwaukee because we can't just leave the team up to Ryan Braun. He's one man. He can't do everything by himself. With Luke Cory out, it, you know, is a lot more on him. You know, Corey Hart's been kind of turning a corner. You know, he's batting 250 now as opposed to batting, I think it was like 230 earlier. You know, Ramos Ramirez had that huge game the other day. But, I mean, it's literally Ryan Braun's batting 315 and nobody's even close to him. I think Nori might be close to him and that's it.
Right.
It's literally a difference of about, I don't know, 0.08. And that's huge. That is huge when it comes to averages. So, I mean, it's been tough, no doubt, but June's a month I think we can rebound easily.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. And I think, you know, Nori being in as much as he is now has been a great relief. Over his last seven games, he's hitting .375. And, you know, Ramirez is starting to step up a lot more lately. And Braun's back into his power mode. So I think things are looking up for Milwaukee. I really do.
Yeah, there's no reason to hit the panic button yet. You know, and people, you know, I've seen analysts keep talking about how, you know, two of the biggest names of the trade deadline are going to be Justin Morneau and Zach Greinke. And I just shake my head. I think regardless of how we do, Greinke is not going to leave us unless the season is over, unless he decides to leave us then. He's not going to leave us before, you know, the season. He's not going to leave us before July 31st. There's no way, you know, that happens. We're not going to trade him. I just don't see that happening.
I'll take Bryce Harper for Greinke straight up.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
You know, I mean, it's gonna have to be a deal like that. It really is. Milwaukee's not stupid. They know who they have. They're not gonna take pitching prospects for it. You know, they're gonna demand some really high level position players, or they're gonna want another big pitcher and, you know, really high prospects. It's a pipe dream for any team that really wants Zach Greinke to get Zach Greinke. Even more so than it is a pipe dream for us to be able to sign a $100 million extension for him at the end of the year.
Yeah, and that's the reality we live in. And there's going to be, you know, a team that's going to offer up to him, no doubt in my mind. But, like you said, it's the matter of the fact that if we do trade him, we will get a lot of, you know, things in return for him and a lot of things we should deserve because, you know, Greinke is a high-caliber pitcher. And I really think, other than his Cy Young year, he hasn't gotten the credit from the mainstream media of the way he pitches. I really don't think he's gotten the credit. You know, he flies under the radar a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think he does, and I think a lot of that is his wish. The idea that, you know, he doesn't like being in the spotlight. He just wants to go out and do his job and be done with that. I think that's a huge part of it. But, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons why people like to make the comparisons of the Zach Greinke status and Prince Fielder. And I want to put something out very clearly. Prince Fielder stayed with us the last couple years strictly out of professional courtesy. There's no reason he had to stay in Milwaukee, and no one expected him to. He did so because he wanted to try to make something happen for these fans.
Yeah, and I have no ill feelings towards Prince Fielder. You know, I when he left, you know, I wished him the best of luck wherever he went, and he went to Detroit, and, you know, I still wish him the best of luck in Detroit. And he's done fairly well there, you know, tagging with Miguel Cabrera and Brennan Bosch and Austin Jackson, guys like that. And, you know, And I don't want to sound biased here because I am a Milwaukee fan. And it's nothing against the Cardinals. Nothing against them at all. But Albert Pujols, I just never really liked because I just always thought he was arrogant. He hits home runs and just stands there. That reminds me of what Barry Bonds is. And I just cannot stand guys who just stand there and just watch the ball go to the park. Run! You know, that just a little thing with me that I just can't stand. It's one of my little personal pet peeves.
Now, Bryce Harper learned that. He's sprinting around the bases now.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen him? He'll hit a ball to shallow right and be flying towards second. I mean, that kid plays with a lot of heart. That's crazy to see, you know, him. And, you know, that's what Davey Johnson likes about him is the fact that he does that. He is willing to give 120%, you know, when he's out there. But the thing about Pujols, though, was why would you leave a team that just won the World Series and has the potential to do just as good the next season? Money. To go to the Angels, who have been gasping for air lately. Though they've won the last eight, I will give them that. It's just, we see it all the time, athletes leave for money, and it irritates me when you know you're on a championship-caliber team and you leave.
Right. That's just the way it is, though, for some people. It's, you know, his case was interesting just because, like, what more do you have to prove? You're a bona fide first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, he's going to be just unanimous across the board number one pick whenever he retires. And to leave to the Angels, like, do you need to go to a rebuilding project? Are you going to go to every team and win a World Series with every team at this point? Like, I don't understand what more you need.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, 10 years down the line, he was going to retire as a Cardinal. And I was fine with that. Now he's going to retire as an Angel. Even though I'm not a Cardinals fan, that kind of bugs me because, you know, he's one of these guys that I thought would have been like a Derek Jeter or Chipper Jones, would have stayed with their team the entire time they played in the MLB. I mean, would you have thought that he would have, say, 3 years ago, gone to a different team like the Angels?
You know, I wouldn't originally think of it, but then again, I also don't know what I would do if someone was waving, you know, $100+ million in my face.
Yeah,
I'd probably work for anyone for 10 years for that kind of money.
Yeah, but I mean, he was already getting enough money to live for his great great grandkids to live off of, and playing in an environment that liked him. Now he goes back there, he's going to get booed. I don't even know if the Angels even play the Cardinals this year.
Oh no, the Cardinals won't. You've seen Cardinal fans; they don't boo anybody.
Yeah, but I mean, Pujols is a different story considering the fact that he was the face of the team for the past 10 years.
Oh, he absolutely was. Absolutely.
So, I mean,
and, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult because I understand. I was always under the impression that if I was a professional athlete, you know, I would. You want to play to win, and you want to play because you're going to be one of the greatest players ever. But at the same time, if you can do that and get millions of dollars, like, you know, at some point, the Cardinals couldn't have matched the Angels' offer, and at some point it becomes like, why not, you know? He didn't have anything else left to do in St. Louis. He's won 2 championships there. I mean, what more does he certainly doesn't owe St. Louis anything more.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like a player like that, who's made such, you know, who's basically molded their entire career in one city, and will forever be remembered with that city, I don't know. It's just a personal thing with me. And, you know, St. Louis fans, you know, guys at Redbird Rants, we love you. But, you know, I just don't understand what Pujols did. You know, it doesn't mean we want you to beat us. We're still going to beat you out later in the season. You know, we just let you feel good now. We'll beat you later in the season. Gallardo will throw, like, 2 perfect games against you guys. So,
no, I mean, there are people in sports like Ryan Braun who make a decision to stay with that team forever.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people like Pujols who eventually feel that their job is done and they need to leave. And the same thing goes for, like, Prince Fielder. Prince Fielder stayed for, you know, 7 years in Milwaukee. Didn't have to, but he did. He tried to make something happen, and he got an opportunity to really make something happen in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, with that huge pitching staff they have and, the you know, the offense they had, that almost championship-caliber team just losing to Texas last year, they have the potential to get right back there. But, I mean, a lot of people have said that the AL Central is Detroit's division to lose, and that's been evident as of lately. You know, they are 23-26 in the year, 4.5 games out from Chicago, who's in first. So, I mean...
Right.
I mean, yeah, again, it I don't see Detroit being that way.
Take a look at the difference in the competitiveness of the standings for a second there. Detroit's 23-26. They're 4.5 games out of the division. We have two less wins than Detroit does. And, you know, we're 7 games out of our division. So is it a case of, you know, St. Louis and Cincinnati are just started way hot and gave everyone a steep hill to climb? I think that's more the case than, you know, this is a tough division to win. I still don't think it's a tough division to win.
No, I think our division, much like the AL Central, is a very soft division in the fact that there can be one or two good teams, and if your team is one of those two good teams and is in fourth, they can rise to second within a week or two, easily.
Oh, absolutely, and I think, you know, Milwaukee fans, and I've been a fan of the Brewers since I was, you know,
yay big,
6 years old. Yeah, my dad took us to a game against the Mariners, and that was Griffey Buehner Martinez brothers Mariners. That was the Mariners. So my brother was a huge Griffey fan. You know, had his baseball cleats, all that, and I became the Brewers beat the Mariners that day, and that was it for me. I was Brewers forever. But and it's always, we're always so quick to call it quits. You know, we are a very loyal fan base, but we're very, very quick to hit the panic button, and we're very quick to look ahead to next season. And I don't, that's doing a disservice to the talent that's on this team, and it's doing a disservice to the way baseball gets played out.
Yeah, because, I mean, you have that 162 season, and you have a lot of games in there to decide whether or not your team is going to go past that 162-game mark, whether it'll play those postseason games. And Milwaukee, it's not a sinking ship yet. You know, we didn't lose 12 in a row like the Cubs, so...
Right.
And, you know, watching that, I'm just like, that sucks. I mean, really, that just sucks tremendously.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Oakland who's lost their last 7, but Milwaukee, you know, we have the potential to turn this around, and there's no reason why we can't. So, yeah, you know, there is the point of looking into next year, but going with what we have now, like you said, it is a disservice to the guys that are doing well, which is like Braun and Greinke, but regardless, you know, that'll change. You know, it's just, you know, these guys are frustrated with the way they're playing, with the way everything's been going, but we have a fan base that is not backing down. We have a fan base that still sells out sometimes, you know, at Miller Park, and that says a lot more than anything. You have fans that support you, you can do well. You know it, they know it, everybody knows it, and there's no reason why you can't.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Milwaukee's going to do fine. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, there really is no reason to hit the panic button. I just hit my keyboard. I'm sorry about that really loud noise.
It's emotional. I understand.
No, yeah. but yeah, I mean, Milwaukee, I think the Central just in general has a very loyal fan base. You know, the Cubs have a very loyal fan base, regardless that they haven't won a World Series in over 100 years. St. Louis has a very loyal fan base. You know, Pittsburgh fans are kind of creeping out of their shadows right now, knowing that they have the chance to turn this around. They're only a game below 500, and they haven't had a season over 500 since 1992. So, I think they're starting to creep out of the fact that, you know, they have the potential there. And it's just, I think the NL Central is one of the most loyal fan bases in all of baseball.
I would have to agree with that. Outside of maybe, you know, the franchises in the AL East, the real staple teams, I think you're absolutely right. And it's, you know, we'll see it come back around, and many, many Brewers fans are still very enthusiastic. I don't want to make a blanket statement like, oh, everyone thinks that the Brewers are done. That's certainly not the case. But they're trying our patience for a lot of people, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, that is a fair thing to say about this. But, you know, all good things come in due time. And So maybe that's the case with the Milwaukee season so far, because, yeah, 21 and 28 is not the prettiest of things. I hate looking at it, but it's what we have to live with for right now, and you just grin and bear it and hope it, you know, changes courses. I think if the starting pitching can follow suit in what Markham and Fires did, that will have no problems. We know Greinke can do it. We know Gallardo has the potential to do it. And, you know, Wolf is kind of the mystery man still, because he's had very bad outings, and he's had some decent outings. But, you know, we get at least 3 out of 5 on all cylinders. Those are 3 out of 5 games that our bullpen doesn't have to really, you know, overextend themselves.
Right. And, you know, on the point of Fires there, we're noticing that, sure, the guys aren't, the people that are stepping up aren't stepping up like, you know, all-stars. They're not, you know, going completely out of control with their numbers. But when people are going down, the people that are coming in are doing a good job. So we don't have the depth of talent that some teams do, but we shouldn't mistake that for a lack of talent.
No, not certainly. And I know, you know, looking at, you know, who we do have in AAA, and even, you know, below that, we have guys that can, you know, I think can do the job done, get the job done. I mean, we have Taylor Youngman, I believe.
Yeah.
You know.
Youngman. Yep.
You know, I think next year he's bound to come up at any time. He has the potential to come up at any time, and we still have guys, you know, like Willie Peralta we've talked about, Brock Clygard, you know, and probably even Logan Schaefer, who has played a few games.
You have Scooter Gennett down there as well, and Thornburg, the pitcher, Bradley, the pitcher. You have a lot. I mean, we have a farm system that's ready to go. And, you know, I was joking with one of my friends the other day after Lucroy went down, and said we might as well just call up Nashville.
Yeah.
And just reassign Milwaukee to AAA for just a little while, just to give them some rest.
Yeah, you know, and I was saying, you know, Milwaukee sooner or later is going to have to start putting fans in on the hot dog vendors to play, but I mean, I don't think it'll get quite that bad, but, you know, if worse comes to worse, we're going to have to bring up guys who aren't ready yet, but, you know, this will be their first taste of being up here. If they do well, then we know we have guys that can play then, and we don't have to stick with guys that we know are injury prone. But, you know, I think Alex Gonzalez's injury was one of the more devastating ones we've had.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, yeah, we lost Matt Gamble. That really sucks. I really hated losing Gamble, but we had people to back him up. With Gonzalez, we had Mason at Esturis, who's also in the DL now, so shortstop is running thin with Masonette and Ransom. I mean, I wouldn't have thought going into this season, you know, heading into June, we have Cody Ransom as our shortstop, because he still was with the Diamondbacks, you know, during the season. So it's sort of not what we expected as Milwaukee fans, but it's what we have now. It's what we're going to have to deal with. And we've noted that, you know, they have done fairly well. Taylor Green hasn't done too awfully bad. Madonna Lou, like you said, did pretty well last night, went 1-for-3 with that hit, you know. And he'll probably obviously be spending time with Kataris. I don't know how much time, because we knew Lou Croy was a four-day guy, and then, you know, would rest whenever Wolf pitches, because Kataris would catch him. So it's going to be interesting to see where they put Martin Maldonado. So.
Right. Speaking of Lou Croy as well, there's news just coming out today. He is undergoing surgery on the hand. He's getting a pin inserted in his hand, and that's scheduled for tomorrow. And he's going to it's not supposed to affect his recovery timeline at all. He's still slated to return 4 to 6 weeks. But yeah, that is what's happening with him right now. So
we just had 5 pretty huge injuries in the last 3 days. We've had, well, no, I don't mean just we. I mean we've had Lou Croy. The Phillies just put Halliday on the DL. The Angels just put Jared Weaver on the DL. The Red Sox are hoping Dustin Pedroia can avoid the DL. He injured his thumb. And the Indians just put Travis Hafner on the DL. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with knee surgery. So I mean, this season still has not been friendly at all to anybody.
No.
I mean, we're used to seeing injuries But, I mean, I honestly, Colin, cannot remember a time where the Major League Baseball has had this many injuries this far into the season. I mean, it's we're not even a full 2 months into the season, and we've had, like, teams have to call the cavalry back, you know, to get guys to play. And it's just, it's unusual, to say the least.
Right. It is, it's interesting. And, you know, people are going to be looking for answers at some point. It hasn't brought into the discussion yet, but people are going to be looking for answers. Like, what do you do with all the these injuries? What does it say about the way they play? Blah, blah, blah. You know, sometimes these things just happen. And when they do, they tend to happen in bunches. You know, because oftentimes when you're trying to be the most careful is when you end up making mistakes. I don't think it's anything really to worry about, but... It is interesting to see it, though.
I think if you're the Phillies, though, the panic button's kind of been broken. I think that instant people, you know, saw, you know, Halliday went out with, you know, I think it was a tight shoulder or whatever, shoulder soreness. I know something with his arm. And people instantly thought, oh, Tommy John surgery. It's going to be Tommy John surgery. He's going to be done. We're going to be screwed. You know, we only have Cole Hamels and Cliff Lee left because Vance Worley's still not back. And I think with Philly, that's kind of a major thing with them. The Angels, not so much. They have Dan Heron, who beat the Yankees last night. They have Ruben Santana. Indians, I don't think it really matters for them to have Travis Hafner, because he DHs every so once in a while. But it probably will affect the Red Sox, noting that they already have their entire outfield pretty much hurt if Pedroia goes in the DL, because that's just going to be adding insult to injury. But most teams can easily rebound from it. But if it's, very good pitcher like Halliday, that hurts a lot more than anything.
Oh, absolutely. But it's something it's something you have to be prepared for.
Yeah, and it's just, Philly has not been doing well at all this year, and it's just like kicking a kid when he's down. That's what people, that's basically what these injuries are doing to Philly. But, you know, on the flip side of injuries, we have players who are doing very well. Melky Cabrera just got his 50th hit last night, you know, in May. I mean,
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, he has been on a tear. Hideki Matsui made his debut for the Rays last night, hit a two-run homer, I believe, but the Rays ended up losing. And then we have, you know, the younger players, very younger players, like Mike Trout and Bryce Harper, who have just been doing very well for their ball clubs. And it's just, it's great to see that we have these guys to come in and replace the guys who are getting injured, because if you don't know, Bryce Harper actually was added to the roster because Ryan Zimmerman was hurt and on the DL, and they brought up him, you know, and replaced that roster spot. So the fact that Harper has not been sent back down and has actually been doing fairly well, and the same goes for Mike Trout with, you know, the catches he's been making in the outfield. He actually robbed Nick Swisher last night of a home run, leaping over the fence and catching it. You know, to have, you know, guys like these two, it's incredible for a team. It drives them to say, well, hey, we've got young talent. Why don't we, you know, not say work and focus solely around that, but let's work with it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And that's, that's the way that every team works eventually. This year, you've seen it in a few more prominent cases than you see most of the time. But these kids just wait and wait and wait for their chance, and then it finally shows up, and people like Trout and Harper are really making the most of it. And, Gamel as well did the same thing when he was still playing. But, I think when you look at that and you try to apply it like to Milwaukee's case, again, I think it's going to be, I think down the road there's very, very little to worry about if you're a Brewers fan.
Yeah.
Long term.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Fiers and Taylor Grant aren't as young as Bryce Harper and Mike Trout, but they have about the same amount of experience, if not less, than both of those two. Because Mike Trout did play last year as well. So, going before in the last night's game, Michael Fiers had only pitched two innings in the MLB ever. And Taylor Green had not even played in the MLB prior to the season. So they're going to have to step it up in big ways. But, you know, I think in due time, they will do just fine. And if Ishikawa is out for longer than we thought, because like you said, there's no, you know, timetable on his return, then it's going to be between him and Hart's playing time at first. But if Taylor Green proves that he can play first every day, then Hart will, you know, eventually back him up sometimes. But I would like to see Taylor Green evolve into showing us that he can be a first baseman.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'd like to see Taylor Green show us something definitive either way.
Yeah.
I guess. He hasn't... I mean, he's been doing decent. He strikes out quite a bit, but he's been... No, I mean, I'm not... as a rookie coming up, I'm not terribly upset at his average. I'm not terribly upset at anything that he's doing. I think he's going to end up being very good, as a matter of fact. It's just a matter of where we can put him, you know?
You know, and that's what Reinicke needs to experiment with a little bit, because we have seen players move different positions. Ryan Braun, you know, started at third when he came up and moved to left. So let's say, hypothetically, you know, we don't re-sign Alex Gonzalez after this year, because I believe we just signed him to a one-year deal.
Right.
We don't have a shortstop. Why not try Taylor Green there? It can't hurt. He plays the infield. He's used to the ball flying at him anyway. You know, with those hot... Because third and first base are the hot shot corners. And shortstop, you know, is that... You know, more traffic does come that way with, you know, line drives and hard grounds being hit that way. But we need to try somebody else somewhere. We just can't have that same mentality of, well, this guy plays here and solely here. You can't do that. It's not healthy for a team. And I think Reinicke knows that.
And, well, he looked good... He looked good in his last couple starts at third. He's got good lateral movement. He's quick to his feet with the ball, and he's quick throwing to, you know, to the base. So it's not inconceivable that he can play shortstop. I think you might see someone like Gannett down in Double A right now start to make the transition to be more of a utility infielder, to be able to play more at shortstop and second, to be that middle kind of guy.
Yeah, and whenever Scooter does come up, it's going to be, you know, tremendous for us, because obviously Brooks Conrad has not turned out the way we thought, and we didn't really have many expectations of him, certainly in this season.
No.
But we do need that utility infielder. And for right now, it's going to have to be Taylor Green, I believe, because we can't put, you know, Aromas Ramirez at short. That's not going to work.
Right.
We can't put Evan Masonette at first. I mean, we need guys where they are for right now, but we need somebody that can play all those positions in case of injury or just a day off. And Taylor Green can be that, and once we bring up Scooter Gannett, that can contribute a lot as well if we have two guys that can do that.
Right, and say what you will about the autumn of Craig Counsell's career, it was nice to have him around for nothing else except that reason. Oh, this guy's down at third for today. Counsell, you're in. This guy's down at short. Craig, do it. This guy's down at second. Counsell can do that. You know, it's nice to have that kind of confidence, and you can't always find those players, but when you do, and if we can start building people to be more versatile, it's definitely going to make the team better as a whole going forward.
Yeah, and with versatility, you know, there are times when you will struggle and you won't win as many games as you want to because you are experimenting, but in the long run, that's going to pay off. I mean, why would it hurt to have a little bit of failure now to have years of success if you know these guys can do it? I think that pays off tremendously if we figure out how that works. You know, I think Reinicke is doing the best he can with the injuries that we've had and the best he can with the way the guys have performed, because you can't blame Reinicke for if Jose Veras comes in and gives up three home runs. You can't blame Reinicke for that. That's not his fault. He's only doing what he thinks, you know, matches up with the batters and the guys who are later up in the lineup, you know, versus our own pitchers. So there's only so much he can do. But, you know, managers always get the blame for everything, so it's to be expected.
Right. Sometimes you play the numbers, and sometimes the numbers play you. So you have to do your best with what you have. I think Reinicke's doing great, you know, and Atanasio giving him and Doug Melvin the big extensions. I believe it was early this month, or maybe even late last month. Signed them both to nice, healthy extensions on their contracts, and well-deserved. And it was a well-deserved shot in the arm, saying, we're moving in the right direction, guys. We know how this works.
You know, and I think, especially with Doug Melvin, the fact that, you know, ever since he came to Milwaukee, you know, he came when Nadios was still there. And ever since then, it's been kind of rebuilding the team and to getting to where we were, you know, last year. And with Doug Melvin, it's been really positive. It's been a very positive atmosphere in Milwaukee. So, like you said, re-signing Melvin and Reinicke is a huge confidence booster for those two, because they know that they can get the job done, and that's what they're getting paid to do, and that's why they were extended, you know, in their contracts. So
right, and they know the pressure's on. They know the pressure's on for them to be a perennial contender now. You get to the NLCS, and you have to do that every year, or you have to make a legitimate effort to do that every year. There are no more rebuilding years in Milwaukee as far as the front office is concerned. It's this year or no year every year from now on.
Yeah, because, you know, getting to there, we know, okay, it's like, okay, we know we can get there now, let's do it again. You know, we can't, you know, retrace our steps and go back three steps and then hopefully get back to where we were. That's not going to happen. So, with the younger talent we do have in, you know, the minors that we can bring up in the next year or so, we can have that little bit of rebuilding in a month or two, maybe in the off season. But that's why I like the beginning of the season so much, because you can experiment with who you have and then get into your serious mode of, okay, this is who we're going to play, you know, at first. This is who we're going to have as our versatile infielder. This is who's going to play right, you know. This is how the pitching rotation is going to be. When you know that in confidence, then you can go forward. When you're still guessing who's going to be the second guy in the rotation, I'm not saying that's us, I'm just saying in general, then you have problems. So our big thing was replacing Narvison. Estrada kind of got the job done, got hurt. We didn't know who the next guy was going to be. We thought it was going to be Manny Parra. I'm glad it wasn't Manny Parra. You know, it's Michael Fiers. And I think Fiers, barring injury, knock on wood, can be a fifth man. He might not, you know, pitch every game like he did last night, but that, we don't expect that, certainly. But it's...
I saw a couple of his spring training games, too, that he played earlier this year, and then when he came up for a couple innings, essentially just a couple innings last season, he did really well. He's got poise for a younger pitcher. He's got good command, and he's not afraid of whoever's at the plate. He'll go right after you, and that's so important for a young pitcher to establish that kind of, I don't want to say dominance, but that kind of presence that, you know, you're not going to push me off this mound.
No, I have a lot of faith in Michael Fiers going forward. I have a lot of confidence in him. I think he can get the job done. He's proven he can get the job done, you know, as of last night, shutting down the Dodgers. So it's been interesting for Milwaukee to see who works and who doesn't work. But I think he might be the guy in that fifth spot, you know, and looking into next year, and I know that's still a very long time off, of where, say, he and Taylor Green do well, you know, maybe, I don't want to say exceeding our expectations, but at least living up to them, then that, you know, gives the question of where do Matt Gamble and Chris Narvison fit back into the equation. Gamble, I think, obviously will still go to first, but Narvison, it's going to be hard to justify putting him back in rotation if Michael Fiers does well enough to, you know, earn his spot.
Right.
So, go on.
I think they came up at a good time. I really do, for Taylor Green and Fiers, and for anyone else, even Masonette. They came up without hype, as most Brewers prospects do.
Yeah.
But, you know, they came up without a lot of hype and without a lot of expectations. They were given the keys and said, let's see what you can do. And that's very important for, I think, for a lot of rookies coming into the league, to have that kind of idea where, you know, it's okay if you make mistakes, we just need you to do the best you can. And that's inspiring to some people, and I think, you know, for someone like Fiers, I see a good future in him, and I see a good future in Green as well, and I think the way they came up this year is going to do really well.
Yeah, because you can't expect your team to go out there and win every game. You can't expect them to win, you know, the World Series every year. You know, it just doesn't happen. But, you know, that is a huge thing going forward, these guys, you know, being mentally prepared with it. You know, Roenicke, you know, patting them on the back, saying, hey, good job today, you know, that was, you know, a nice performance out of you. It just, that helps you going forward, knowing you can pitch in the major leagues, or you can bat in the major leagues in field, and get the job done, and do your job just like, I don't know, Roy Halladay, you know, how Roy Halladay gets the job done, or how, you know, Paul Konerko gets the job done at first. It's inspiring to know that you can do the same job they can. Maybe not to the same degree, certainly, because they've been in the league a lot longer. But, you know, there's no reason as to why, you know, these guys should hang their heads. Because regardless of how the season ends, we know we have guys who have proven to us, not only through spring training, but through the season, that they are capable of getting this done.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a gamble, certainly, but it's a gamble worth taking.
Yeah, absolutely. And it has to happen eventually, so...
You know,
why not now?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think, you know, we took a gamble there, you know, signing Aoki, because Japanese players, like we've talked about before, are 1 in 5 does well. You know,
right.
And I mean, offensively pitching this year, two have done well, and Darvish and Aoki have done pretty well. Aoki should get more time. We've talked about this before. And, you know, Niger Morgan, it's just, it's hard not to play him, but when you're batting 217, it's just, it's hard to play you then, because you have a guy in Nori who has speed, and he can fly around the bases. You know, he had that inside the park home run earlier this year, and he can play center, he can play right. I mean, it's hard to justify not playing him.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think in terms of Niger and Aoki, you know, Aoki, obviously, he's a bona fide star. He is. He was in Japan, multiple batting titles, essentially a household name in Japanese baseball. Not to the extent that, say, Darvish was, but, you know, Aoki definitely was one of those elite players there, and he's doing really well so far in Milwaukee, and so he deserves to have that playing time. And Morgan's got to fight through his slump, and he has to go back to borrow his phrase, using his plush dementals, and just being, you know, being that guy that he was at this time last year, where he was just, you bring him in certain spots and he makes something happen.
Yeah, I mean, it hurts, you know, not having Lucroy in that lineup when, you know, Guitars catches and then we put, you know, Lucroy in for a pinch hit and he gets that hit. Now we don't have that anymore. You know, like you said, we did have that with Morgan last year. Can we have that with him this year? I hope so, because we don't have anybody right now that can just go in and pinch hit and that we can think we'll get a hit that's already not in the lineup. So it's hard. It's really hard to judge based on these guys saying, well, I think he can get the job done. Like you said about Cody Ransom, what he said, he used to be a good player.
Right.
Okay, he used to be good, then why do we have him if he used to be good? You know, we don't want the rejects of the MLB who can't play anymore. I'm not saying Cody Ransom can't play, but being an infielder at 36, I mean, not many guys can pull that off and pull it off well. So, I think if we have a mediocre spot, it's going to be shortstop for the rest of the season. But, I mean, and one mediocre spot doesn't hurt you. Three mediocre spots, then you're kind of getting in the rough.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for now, it's like, we've seen what's happening. We see the team start to turn a corner. And now it's kind of like, give them some time. Let's see how it works.
Yeah, and going forward, it's just, it's odd to see, you know, how the lineup's going to fare, because we still do have Ricky Weeks leading off a lot of the time, which I still don't agree with. But, I mean, you know, we had Matt Gamble as that guy, but it's hard to say now who it's going to be. But, you know, why not have, you know, maybe Aoki lead off? I think that could be interesting to have. He has done that before in past games. He's led off. And then, you know, have Lucroy behind him at second, but Lucroy is out. So, it's hard fighting with injuries, because the plan you did have is now backwards. And
right.
You have to make sure there's at least contact at the beginning of the lineup, then power with the rest of it. Because if you have power and then contact and then that's it, it's backwards, because you have guys that will hit home runs and then you have guys that can hit, but that's all they'll do. They'll just get on first base and then the next guy will hit into a fielder's choice, double play. But if you have Aoki on with Weeks behind him, and then Braun comes up, and you have a potential for a 3-run homer. I mean,
yeah.
Or at least a 2-run homer. Aoki's on, you know, Weeks flies out or something. I mean, you still have the potential to go up, you know, by 2 runs.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, you know, I don't know. It's hard, and you don't want to depend on someone like Braun. You don't want to depend on the power. You know, no one. It's always fun to see a team that hits a ton of home runs, but it's hard to really depend on that, and so you have to kind of, you know, the Brewers are transitioning to a team that's going to be more on the bases, but still has a lot of power you know, in their lineup. And so watching that transition happen can be frustrating sometimes.
Yeah, and it's just, like you said, we can't leave it all to Braun. It's just, he's one guy, they can only do so much. He can't do everything. So it's hard to just leave it all up to him.
Right.
All right, one last thing I want to mention today, and just talk about just briefly, is the fact that the Rangers have agreed to sign Roy Oswalt. You know, I think with this, it's just, I honestly think I can say the Rangers are now the team to beat. You know, because I think Roy Oswalt, you know, aside from his injury that he had with Philly, really did well. And a lot of people say, well, he didn't do that great. No, he did pretty well with Philly. He never had an ERA over 4. You know, his first year at Philly, he did very well. He was 7-1 with a 1.74 ERA. You know, and he did well with Houston all those years. So I think Texas signing him adds to that rotation, because with Feliz out, you know, they had Feldman in there temporarily, so you have basically a rotation with Darvish and Holland and Lewis and Harrison, and now Oswald eventually in about 3 or 4 weeks when they expect to have him up there. And it just right. adds so much to Texas. It really does.
It does. And, you know, to some degree, people are going to say, well, you know, isn't that a little worrisome? He's been out of the league, you know, does he still have it, that type of stuff. But I think if you have the money and he wants to play with you, why not? Why not take the chance?
You know, because I've noted that, you know, and I've seen this before, that ever since Mike Maddox became the pitching coach of the Rangers, and, you know, them scouting Darvish for those years before they finally signed him, they know what they're doing there. They have a team that's run by Nolan Ryan, who is one of the greatest pitchers in baseball himself. So when they're right. talking about pitching, Texas knows what they're talking about. So,
yeah.
If Oswalt knows he can pitch, he can pitch. I mean, Ron Washington has said he doesn't take his guys out of games. His guys take them out of games. If they say, hey, I can go another inning or two, Washington lets them. He doesn't just take their guys out there in the gym. He lets them work out of it. And I think that's one of the best things you can do for your pitchers, is let them mentally figure that out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's really no reason for Rangers fans to concern themselves with signing Roy Oswalt. I think it's a great signing, personally. I would have liked to have him in Milwaukee, but that's just a little bit unreasonable.
Yeah.
but it's, you know, good for the Rangers. It's interesting to see that Oswalt's going to be there and how he'll do. But they're definitely, I think, the team now to be in the AL, certainly.
Absolutely.
All right, well, thank you for listening this week. Stay tuned for next week, guys.
Thanks.